back area where the plants were and stuff, sneaking up on us in a low crouch, you know, in the middle of the night, 3 or 4 o'clock.
Yes, evidence of snoring, right?
It was as if it was a combat situation where the enemy was coming up.
They were practicing.
You know? It was exactly the same thing, you know. And that used to really bug me, you know, that they would actually do this just because it was a protest of the homeless, you know. And coming in just like they were coming into drug addicts or, a whole house full of drug addicts or something, you know.
I know that all kinds of bizarre behavior by police happened, including and by city council members. Mike Rodkin stole the sign that said, you know, Rodkin is a liar. Kennedy came and tore down signs and the sleeping van.
And they called in the cops to get Pat Ring for, I think he hung a sign up there or something. And then Pat Ring cussed at him and Mike Rodkin...
I think you devised the real truth behind Rodkin.
Anyway, Rodkin and Kennedy were standing there and they were laughing while the cops were
tearing down the sign
and roughing up Patrick Ring too.
Right, and he beat all those charges in court, as I remember.
But also that injunction was illegal, as far as I know. I heard that about 6 months later, after the protest, that injunction was actually illegal.
Well, I thought it was unconstitutional in the beginning, but I never heard that it had actually been dissolved.
That's what somebody told me, that they did find out it was totally illegal.
Let me ask you this. Larry Templeton, who heads we began talking about Camp Paradise,
right,
which is the campground that the city wants to disperse, probably because... It really points out, A, that homeless people can do something very positive, but that they, if in this situation, in this city, even doing something positive means being illegal.
Right.
Designing sleeping quarters. They go to Denny's, is what they say, which is pretty close by. But they asked for a porta-potty and a dumpster from Fitzmaurice, who said he would get them a dumpster, and I think about the porta-potty, and of course they never heard another word from him, and he hasn't returned any of their phone calls in the last 3 weeks, which sounds sort of like the old regime, and it's the same old regime, of course.
Yeah, right.
But they're talking about resisting this, not only with petitions, but refusing to leave, and if they're taken going to jail, and if they're jailed when they're released, setting up a campground again. You were in the middle of such a protest that went on for 8 months. It must have been rather, and you saw, you know, it didn't seem to lead to any meaningful long-term changes in the sleeping ban or a campground, although 3 years later, Catherine Byers and the task force to examine the camping ordinance passed certain minor changes that made it,
right,
lowered the fine, that
right,
allowed for
right,
sleeping in a driveway and
right,
sleeping in a business parking lot, which doesn't really accommodate any more than a fraction of homeless people.
Right, right.
But this seems to be a very strong determination by these campers and others with them, including myself, Jim Costner, and others, to join them and students from University of California in direct civil disobedience if the police and the city decide they are going to simply deny basic survival rights to these people. What would be your advice about, you know, where a new campsite should be set up? What should they do for a maximum effect if their camp is destroyed on July 1st? They're taken to jail, and then they're released, and they want to set up a second campground or do something else that would dramatize the issue. Should they go back to City Hall?
Should
they go downtown?
The homeless people?
People who are determined, who are willing to be rearrested and so forth.
Oh, I'd love to see the UCSC, but I guess they're out of session now, aren't they? Or I'd like to see them march on Santa Cruz, man. 10,000 people, hell, you know. 10,000 protesters would be great.
Right.
That would wake some of these people up, you know.
That would be good, but I would say that, as you point out, they're out of session. What you're going to have are a relatively small number of people, but from what I hear, and I could be wrong, dedicated people who are willing to keep going back to jail. Where would be the best place for them to make their protest? How should it be done, as a man who's done this kind of thing in the past? I'm springing this on you. Have any offhand thoughts?
The mall or the city hall, because the only way they can make these... I think the only way they can make this stop is if they can really hurt financially this downtown district, you know? If that happens, then the business people themselves would change the sleeping ban or get a place for the homeless to sleep, you know? It's terrible. It's just totally terrible. I don't really have that good of advice, but...
I've always thought that people should do daytime protests here and then, you know, put their mattresses on top of their cars and sleep here during the day, and then at night stay awake all night because it's illegal to lie down on Pacific Avenue.
I'd actually like to see them... if we only had the numbers, you know? If you have 10,000 people... No, let's say we have 5,000 people. If we have 5,000 people walking down through this mall, I'll tell you what, they would wake up in a hurry.
Well, I would say even 50 people who want to keep doing it would have an impact.
Yeah, you're right.
Even a smaller number.
And another thing, too, is I guess the advice I would give is just keep trying, you know, keep trying to do, because it's been a long line of protests and different things that we've done, you know, and that no one person can really fight the battle, or one issue, you know, I mean, one group of people is not going to win this battle, you know, it's just so never anything, like David Silva picked up where we left off on the city. I think you and David Silva picked up where we left off, and then now it's a new group, and now it's this group over here.
Our grandchildren will be still looking for their right for people to see.
I have to say that Robert Norris has kept the homeless issue alive, you know, to try to get the rights for the homeless people.
Well, thank you, Dan Hopkins. Wish these campers luck.
Oh yeah, for sure. Give them all the support you can. Sign all their petitions. And be out there if they...
You're a regular working man now yourself, right?
Yeah, but I think I'll try to be there.
All right. Thank you, Dan Hoffman.
Okay. All right. We'll see
you. And that was activist Dan Hopkins speaking in a street interview in front of Borders Books, so on Pacific Avenue, a week or two ago, a relatively long interview, which he reviewed his own struggle with an earlier tent city, the last legal campground, actually the only legal campground ever in Santa Cruz, at least when I was here, called the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. And when I brought it up at City Council last Tuesday, Fitzmaurice got this nasty smirk on his face and said, "Coral Street Open Air Shelter sounds like an oxymoron." That was his comment. So I don't know who's the ox and who's the moron here, but I must say we've got a bunch of moral midgets at City Council who don't seem to recognize that basic human rights not are just being denied, but basic survival needs are being denied every night here in Santa Cruz, and yet they don't mind dumping money into a Pogonip clubhouse. They don't mind dumping money into a twice as expensive as it ever was police station. They are just all prepared to shovel money at the redevelopment agencies, the redevelopment of the businesses area downtown, with Scott Kennedy's perennial claim, "Oh, well, we're going to get some social service tax money out of that." That's his constant reply when anyone says, "Why aren't you putting the money directly into housing, directly into social services, directly into even, you know, programs that are self-managed homeless programs like this Camp Paradise?" I mean, there isn't actually any money that Camp Paradise is requiring. It's just requiring the city back off. And the question is, will the city back off, and for how long? The police have said they won't back off. As recently as 2 days ago in the Mercury News, Jeff Locke, deputy police chief, said, "We don't even have to wait till July 1st to drive away Camp Paradise. We can do it whenever we want." And, of course, that's true. That's what the camping ban is. It is a blank check that criminalizes all homeless people in tents 24 hours a day. They can be searched, they can be questioned, they can be arrested, and it criminalizes the rest of the homeless community that doesn't want to set up a tent or is afraid to between the hours of 11 and 8:30 in the morning, when if they fall asleep or they are suspected of sleeping or covering up with a blanket, they too fall under the dark shadow of Belcher's Police Department or Jim Lang's Parks and Rec or the California Highway Patrol or the university police, or the hosts, or the first alarm security. You name it. The permutations are many, but the basic result is the same. If you're homeless and you're poor, hide out or get out. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse, and you can call in if you want to comment on this harsh rhetoric you're hearing here at 427-3772. I would only remind you that the rhetoric is harsh because the reality is harsher. And that, of course, is the real problem. A couple of updates on Camp Paradise. Camp Paradise finally got its porta potty, not because Christopher Crone fulfilled his commitment that he made 2 years ago in the task force on bathrooms in 1999, actually more like 2.5 years ago. No. Crone, as usual, has done nothing. Rather because Camp Paradise itself got together and got a porta-potty for the Saturday barbecue last Saturday, a porta-potty which mysteriously disappeared several days later, and it's hopefully been replaced. I think that Larry Templeton, who's a Camp Paradise spokesperson, has tried to have that replaced today. We have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Hello? Free Radio here.
Can't
hear you.
That young man
Well, try again, caller. That one didn't work. It looks like we had a bad line. As I was saying, the porta potty may be replaced. Some are suspicious that city pressure had removed the porta potty, or maybe police department pressure. It's not clear. Again, rumors are flying. Nobody knows what's going on. They do know there is apparently some confirmation that the running water that the cemetery, which is right above Camp Paradise, which for those of you who don't know is located just upriver from the Highway 1 bridge along the river. You can get it by going down Felker Street next to Denny's, parking and walking down under the bridge along a path that is well kept and has got some large signs, and you can see your way there. The running water that the Oddfellows Cemetery was supplying has been cut off because of city pressure. The city has dropped the pressure, and so there ain't no water for the Camp Paradise people. I guess they get their own water from the river now and boil it to make it safer. Not quite sure what they do, but perhaps they'll explain that at some point. A rather sad sign I found from the fund-grabbing Community Action Board is a recent decision they had, which I saw on the Internet. In 1993, I was pleased to see that Paul Brindell of the Community Action Board was announcing that the Community Action Board was one of the first organizations to condemn not just the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, but the entire camping ordinance, stating that as long as there was a shelter emergency, it was completely inappropriate and wrong to criminalize people who had to make their own shelter, to wit, a tent. Now, apparently, the Community Action Board has backpedaled, and their latest statement asks for safe and legal places to sleep, and it says that there shouldn't be a sleeping ban, but it says nothing about the broader camping ban, which, for example, affects Camp Paradise. So it looks like the Community Action Board is weaning out, as I would like to say. Brindell has done this on a number of issues over the last 2 years to his discredit, ranging from the Coffee Clatch. That was the group of people. I was one of three people that Fitzmaurice went after to bar from city council offices. Brindell was the sole dissenting vote, which when the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project voted to support us and to oppose Fitzmaurice's injunction, Brindell said he wouldn't do that. Brindell has also been the cheerleader for the Dolphin Lee Project, the bulldoze the people in the beach flats under the guise of giving them better housing, mainly because I think of his sweetheart connections with Mercy Charities Housing. So, Paul, if you're listening, don't do that. Panda Bear Paul, as I used to call you, you fuzzy little guy, you stand up for the principles that we have come to regard you as standing up for. And I have nothing against Paul personally. I talked to him at City Council a couple of weeks ago. He came over to me after I was kicked out for inquiring of when the public comment period was. Thank you, Tim Fitzmaurice. And he told me that, he actually genuinely wanted to know about Camp Paradise, and he showed up there on Saturday. He was interested last Saturday in finding out what they were doing. Well, I left a message in his machine today to find out what the hell is going on with this new backtracking of the Community Action Board, which does numerous good things around vouchers for homeless people and so forth, and I haven't gotten any reply. And I'm sorry about that, and I hope that Paul gets back to me, and I hope this isn't true, but unfortunately I'm afraid it is. I want to remind people that there will be a homeless working group meeting in a week, Thursday. I guess it'll be July 5th. I think that's when that is. See, second, third, fourth. Yeah. At 9 o'clock in Baker's Square. Yeah, that's Baker's Square Restaurant on Ocean Street, right across from Beach City Gas. It's kind of two blocks down from Denny's on one side and two blocks down from the Santa Cruz Diner on the other, if you know where that is. Homeless Working Group will be talking about ways to end the sleeping ban and deal with human rights issues as well as other homeless matters. This is not a kiss-ass group as far as I'm concerned. If it is, I will kiss it goodbye. I don't want to see people sitting around playing footsie with Charlie Phillips or other people who don't want to do anything. Charlie, with all respect, I found people in your group, in the Monday morning group, have just been spending your time playing footsie with Ed Porter and other council members, and goes nowhere. We need to get out there and organize the community. We need to get out there and get the advocates together. It's time to stop hoping the city council is going to do something. It's time to stop allowing the city council a veto on even the groups that organize to get this thing going. That's all the wrong approach. So I'm hoping that this homeless working group meeting from 9 to 11 every Thursday morning will be doing something real. And that could be happening. Tomorrow at 10 o'clock in Department 1, or it could be Department 2. They're right next to each other, and you can find out by checking the court calendars at 701 Ocean. Steve Elliott, who I call Rockman D for Rockman Downtown, he's a guy who's a homeless activist himself who was hassled by Officer RoboCop Perry, the same guy that went after Camp Paradise's Rick and towed his vehicle from the Albertsons parking lot up on Brant's Forte or up in that general area. Perry went after Steve Elliott, by his account, for small rock sculptures, like 1 foot high, that you can sometimes see out on, I'm told, Westcliff Drive. I've actually not seen them myself. In the studio, we have Linda LeMaster, who has seen them, and I will take her word for it. So he's going to court. Why, is it illegal to build little rock sculptures? No. Is it illegal to sit down? No. Is it illegal to have a sign about that? No. But what Officer Perry used was the catch-all police phrase, blocking the sidewalk. That's the same thing that was used among other ordinances. You can see, I believe, by looking in the Metro, I'm not sure if that actually was in the story this week, to go after the marimba players. Sergeant Butchie Baker, again, apparently not satisfied with harassing bicyclists and reportedly harassing 10 women, sexually harassing them in 1991 and 92 in a public scandal that is still unresolved, and as a response being promoted by the police department to sergeant and declared officer of the year. Thank you, former chief, what the hell was his name? Belcher is the new chief, the old chief. Barrisoni is the lawyer. Gino Pini was the earlier chief. No, it's the new guy from L.A. who came in for a decade and then left. I don't remember his name right now, but I will. In any case, we have the same stuff going on. Belcher is attacking the farmer. I'm not Belcher. Baker, Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker, is attacking the farmer's market, harassing hippies there, spending inordinate amounts of time talking to the young, attractive, one young attractive woman I found, and we interviewed her on the air, and she talked about that at some length. I mean, I do it. I don't deny my constant demand for hugs, but I don't have a badge and a gun, folks, and I don't have that same power that a police officer does. So Officer Baker, I should say Sergeant Baker, you know, it's time to back off. And Lieutenant Saponi, apparently one of the evil geniuses behind this campaign to eliminate marimba music downtown, as well as music in other venues, because she was running around doing this in other places. Well, there's no point in talking to I think, the police department about this in any realistic way. The community has to talk to itself and organize, and that's what marimba people are doing. I don't have enough time to play the interviews that I got from several well-spoken spokespeople for the marimba folks at City Council who spoke on Tuesday, and I'm going to be playing more of that on Sunday when Bathrop Spears Broadsides returns, and that'll be at 11 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, unless something unusual happens. We go for 2.5 hours on Sunday, and we'll be talking then. Another interesting thing that's happened is you may recall that long interview with Dan Hopkins, who I call Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins. He was a man who fought for the first tent city, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which had, you know, dozens and dozens, several hundred people were in it at its maximum, all crammed into 1/4 acre, but as I said, safer than they were when they were told to leave by the police, by Rotkin and by Kennedy and by Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau, when after which they died, 13 of them, according to Hopkins in his interview. Hopkins was an activist who joined the River Street Refugees, a small group of 50 who Rotkin, in a show deal sent to New Brighton Beach, said, look how the city is wonderfully spending money to send folks off to the state parks. Of course, that provoked a huge reaction from right-wingers, claiming, oh, they're sending their homeless to the state parks. And, of course, in a certain sense, they were right. The city wasn't using its own park space and wasn't using its own greens belt space, wasn't dealing with its own homeless community, but was exporting it, deporting it, making it into refugees, hence the River Street Refugees, because the River Street was the area they came from around where the original Coral Street open-air shelter was, right off of River Street. But at that time, the River Street Refugees actually wanted to find a piece of property themselves in the county, which is more, of course, land than the city, and set up a campground. And this has often been the cry for people, you know, they've come up to me and said, you know, what can we do? In fact, activist Dan Alper, who helped set up the Monday Morning Group, originally called the Maine the mainstream abolitionists interested in abolishing the sleeping ban wanted to know if a piece of property could be bought for homeless people where they could set up their own tent city, their own eco-village, whatever, very sensible approach. And in 1996, in January and February, when the River Street Refugees had been created by Rotkin and Kennedy's destroying the Coral Street open-air shelter tent city, at that time, they, too, were looking for a place to go. And they, in order to deal with it, they had to deal with the ordinances in the county. And the county does not have a camping ban the way the city does. It has a ban on sleeping in vehicles on county roads and rights of way, on beaches and in parks. But it doesn't have a ban on sleeping in county property, nor is there a ban for private property, as there is in the city, on sleeping and camping. But there was a camping ban for four zones, in the four small zones closely adjacent to the city in the Paradise Park area. In order to determine where to go, the River Street Refugees went to the city and got a map, actually the county, and got a map of where those zones were. For 5 years, that map has disappeared. I have repeatedly asked the Sheriff's Department, the Board of Supervisors, the City Council, the County Planning Commission, the County Surveyors, what the hell is going on? Where are these no camping zones and where are they not? And I've gotten blank looks, or no calls returned, or we don't know what you're talking about. Well, I finally talked to Andy Schifrin, who is Marty Wormhout's
good old Andy,
who's the only
guy in Santa Cruz that knows diddly.
Yeah, I guess so. Supervisor Marty Wormhout's flack man. This is anti homeless Wormhout, who has declared there will be no discussion of homeless issues in the upcoming campaign, and he finally got me this map. Thank you, Andy. Now maybe you can get Marty to address homeless issues. I think that's a bigger, more difficult deal. Anyway, so the map does exist, and lo and behold, what does it say in small print on the side? Copyright January 1996. It's been available for 5 years. It's been suppressed by the county for 5 years. Tomorrow at 10 a.m., Steve Elliott, Rockman D, goes to trial in Department 1 or 2 down at the county building. Go down and be there to support him. He needs your help. When they pick off one person, they pick off all of us. So I'll be there. Hope to see you there. 10 o'clock in the morning. Let's get together and support people who are facing these bogus prosecutions for trivial stuff. And maybe we can show them that it's not so easy to go after people that way. We are running out of time, as I'm becoming painfully aware because of the presence of that infamous Uncle Dennis. Not a talk show host, I would like to point out. And he's here to do some kind of mischief around the environment. I'm not quite clear what that is. But what I will do is I will allow Grito Serpentino to greet you and to allow him a little opportunity to set up before he tells you just what is going on with Earth First. Maybe Earth First will do a little homeless first as well and get its butt down to Camp Paradise, show them how to do some lockdowns, and try to help out the human beings as well as the Redwoods. Is that too much to ask for Santa Cruz Earth First? Well, they haven't done it in 5 years, but maybe they will. Talk to Uncle Dennis. Give a call to him. He'll be on next.
Now, Robert, why don't you just hide out or take a hike?
Forcible seizure of the mic at Uncle Dennis as usual because he's a big thug. Dennis, get Earth First together to do some shit, man, about human beings. Oh,
right,
trees.
Now.
Oh, goody, goody. Spare me, man.
Chicago Funero. That will never bust enough Mexicans. Harass enough Chicanos to beat the shit out of enough Cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out impalas and cherried out mini trucks as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on Saints Deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean, no fucking Mexican zone. Downtown, downtown when you're brown on a Friday night is no place to be, because SJBD will pull you over for being downtown and brown and for no other reason. Yourself at the corner of 27th in Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs. Put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you,
they'll plant something. Anyway, you can plant something on Bathrobe Spears' broadside on Sunday about 11 o'clock. He'll be back.
Bathrobe Spears' broadside.
It goes along with nuclear. Anyway, get your tape out of the machine. Get your CD out of the player. You know, just take a hike.
Oh, stop it, you big thug.
Yeah, Robert,